Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear a little bit about hydrocephalus from Shauna Bodwin. So tell me a little bit about hydrocephalus and spina bifida, your work surrounding it.
Okay, so hydrocephalus is a neurological condition. Basically what happens is the cerebral spinal fluid that we all have that cushions our brain becomes blocked, and that excess amount of fluid builds up and can cause damage to the brain. So what happens with hydrocephalus is that fluid has to be diverted, and usually it involves a brain surgery to insert a shunt that is two pieces of tubing connected by a valve or a reservoir that regulates the flow of the cerebral spinal fluid to another portion of the body, usually the stomach area or the heart. They can also do another procedure called an endoscopic third ventriculostomy, but the more prevalent procedure is shunting. Spina bifida is a neurological condition as well. It's a neural tube defect, and it occurs within the first 3 weeks of pregnancy. And basically, the spinal column does not form properly, leaving varying degrees of physical disability in the individual.
So, do you know offhand about how many people are impacted by these conditions?
So, we have a rough estimate that with hydrocephalus in Canada, about 120,000 Canadians are affected by hydrocephalus. With spina bifida, the numbers have gone down significantly in the last 10 years. That could be because of people taking folic acid prior to conception, which has been shown through research to reduce the risk of NTDs by about 75%. The other reason that spina bifida has become a little less prevalent is with the medical technology that's available now with pregnancy. And this is a topic that we don't really like to discuss very much. We know that a lot of pregnancies don't continue. However, they're not tracked in Canada. So the prevalence of spina bifida is a little bit harder to determine. We generally say 1 in 1,300 babies born have spina bifida in Canada.
So you tell me a little bit about your own work and supporting these individuals.
Certainly. So I've been with the association now for 25 years. I started as a volunteer, and funny enough, I know that this is a Windsor radio station. I am from the region originally, and I had moved up to Toronto, and my mom was visiting me, and she was heading back home to Wheatley on the train, and across from her, she noticed the lady had a binder that said spina bifida on it. So she started up a conversation with this lady, and she happened to be a board member of the Spina Bifida and Hydrocephalus Association, which Hydrocephalus Canada was for 45 years. In 2017, we became a national charity focusing on Hydrocephalus Canada. So I have a long history with the organization. My main role is to support individuals, families, and healthcare providers in understanding hydrocephalus and bifida and guiding them on their journey with these two conditions.
So when you say guiding and providing them with information, are there any myths out there concerning this condition?
Myths. I wouldn't say myths necessarily. I would say maybe misconceptions about the conditions. Spina bifida is definitely a birth defect. There's no way you can catch it. I guess that would be considered a myth. You cannot catch spina bifida. It is something that you are born with and is a pediatric condition that the healthcare professionals see in abundance, but once you start to get into the adult field of medicine, it's not as common because it's only been in the last, I'm going to say 15, 20 years that those of us with spina bifida have lived longer lives as adults. And with hydrocephalus, it can happen at any time in life. So we see it in preemies. Quite often they will have an intraventricular hemorrhage and the hydrocephalus will develop because of that trauma. Brain injury traumas will often result in the person developing hydrocephalus as well as brain tumors. And then there's simply people born with the condition as well. What we are seeing an uptake in is people over the age of 65 that develop another form of hydrocephalus called normal pressure hydrocephalus. And it's a little more difficult to diagnose because the symptoms are very similar to Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And it looks like the beginning of dementia, early dementia.
So in your time with the association, is there any success story that stands out for you?
Absolutely. There's been lots of successes. For one, we have a world-renowned medical advisory board, and it is now expanded with national representation from other provinces. A lot of those people on the medical advisory board are world-class researchers as well in the areas of spina bifida and hydrocephalus, and they often are involved in global research projects. We have also established two scholarship programs. One is called the E. Bruce Hendricks Scholarship, and the other is the Luciana Spring Mascarin Bursary, which is actually only available to people in Windsor, Essex, and Chatham-Kent County who have spina bifida and hydrocephalus. We're also involved in a advocacy group called Neurological Health Charities Canada. Basically, it's a group of brain disorders and conditions that came together to advocate for research and multidisciplinary care for those with brain conditions. And we are also involved with the Canadian Brain Research Strategy, Transforming the Future Through Brain Science. We collaborate with many researchers and clinicians on a regular basis, from centers such as the Hospital for Sick Children, Holland Bloor View Kids Rehab, and Bloor View Research Institute, and the University of Toronto Medical Students, and Child out of McMaster University. We also are very proud of our programs that directly support parents, individuals, and children living with these conditions.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Mary Ann Ferdrick from the Learning Disabilities Association. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with the Learning Disabilities Association.
Well, the latest is just making sure that our clients are receiving the support that they need, especially during COVID. So what we ended up doing was moving our programming to online, but providing a different type of program that better supports children who are either learning virtually or who are in schools but need the extra support. So we're offering the one-to-one tutoring program, and we also started a reading program that is for children who want to practice their reading and become better readers. And we're also offering some employment programs, as a lot of clients are having difficulties finding employment during these times.
So, for those who might not be as familiar with your work, what types of disabilities do you most commonly see?
We just work with individuals with learning disabilities and or ADHD.
So, what type of learning disability is most common then?
But there's all sorts of different learning disabilities. There isn't any that's more common than the other.
So, what sorts of challenges exist in tailoring things for online programming at this time?
I think the biggest challenge is the technology, either the technical knowledge of the people that are using it, and a big one is the access to the technology.
And how are you going about getting around some of these issues?
So we have a really good team that is pretty tech savvy, so we're providing support that way. We've offered some training as well on how to use the technology. So in the summer, we offered some tech programming. We're offering some right now so that people can learn how to use the technology that they need for school or for work, and we're also loaning out equipment for those individuals who do not have access to any technology.
So, in your time with the association, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
We've had a lot of successes. I guess the biggest one that I can see over the since my time here in the last 10 years has been the expansion of our programming, especially for adult clients, providing more and more support for employment services and employment supports.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for your ongoing work, what would you say?
So, we're always in need of people that are willing to support, to provide funds so that we can provide the programming to children who come from low-income families that might not be able to access services in the community, mainly the tutoring. So our tutoring program, we do employ teachers, so there is a cost to that, and we do provide subsidies to families, so those donations are very helpful for providing the subsidies to the families and ensuring that we can maintain a good quality program.
So, are there any projects on the horizon for the association?
Nothing at the moment. We're just going day to day and ensuring that, you know, we're giving the support and service that everyone needs now during COVID, but there's nothing in the works for right now.
So are you working in partnership with any other organizations during this time to best serve your client base?
Well, we partner with the local school boards, and we partner with other charities that also provide programming for individuals who are marginalized. So Yeah, we work with a lot of other organizations.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Windsor Youth Center is a free drop-in community center for homeless and at-risk youth in the Windsor Essex area. The WYC assists people with many important things, such as replacing identification, resume writing, as well as providing meals, snacks, and a safe space for youth to come together. The Windsor Youth Center is located at 1247 Wyandotte Street East and is open Monday to Friday from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. For more information, visit their website at downtownmission.com under the services or give them a call at 226-674-0006.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. Earlier in our show, we heard from Shauna Bodwin, who told us a little bit about spina bifida and hydrocephalus, and from Marianne Ferdrick, told us a little bit about the Learning Disabilities Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, Lisa Gozman will be telling us a little bit about the latest ostomy happenings. So tell me a little bit about the latest ostomy work.
So Ostomy Canada Society is going through some changes with their board of directors. The president has held her term for 5 years and has resigned. She was holding the position without a vice president for that entire time. So now it looks like the organization is going to try to go to a paid position of president as well as vice president, which is a big change for us because we have always been solely volunteer-based. They do have a very good board of directors underneath them, so everything is still working and going ahead for now, and while a search for president and vice president happen, that would be the biggest change.
So, can you tell me a little bit about the overall work that has been going on in regards to raising awareness of ostomies?
There's been a ton of work going on. It's the main highlights of those would be organizing more peer support groups so that more people have access to support. We used to have main chapters that people belong to, but now they've gone to these peer support groups so that people in the rural communities can have better access. So support has always been our mission. We have worked hard as well on the disability tax credit to make sure that all people who are living with a permanent ostomy are aware that they are eligible for that and to be sure that they're taking advantage of that, because it definitely makes a huge difference, as you probably know, on taxes.
Yes. So during the whole COVID situation, how have the support groups been affected?
Been a bit tough on the support groups because all of the support groups have been face-to-face meetings for our entire 4-year history. It's obviously with COVID, people can't get together. So I know some chapters and peer support groups, did do some Zoom meetings, are doing some Zoom meetings now. It was pretty quiet up until about August. You know, really no contact for myself because I'm the administrator for the youth camp. We had to cancel youth camp for the first time in history. Obviously, it wasn't safe for the kids to be traveling on airplanes and going through airports to get out here to Calgary where the camp is run. So my committee, we ran 5 or 6 different Zoom meetings for the campers, anybody who wanted to participate. And sort of the same thing that the chapters are now doing is to make sure that people feel supported and check in on each other's mental health, especially in my position with the kids. Camp is really something that they look so forward to for the whole year because it's a chance for them to be with their friends and to be with people who understand them because they're living with a similar condition. So that mental health check-in is very important.
So what would you hope for when COVID has passed and work resumes more on an in-person basis?
I'm hoping that it gets back to the way that it was, but even better, I think that this has given everybody a chance to reevaluate what's going on in the organization, find areas where we can improve, and that work is already going on. So we're just hoping for a better organization once we're able to get, you know, back to working normal. Just the awareness is so important. People who live with ostomies, it's still an invisible disability because we're able to hide it under our clothes. So it's just raising that awareness of how important it is that we talk about this and make sure that people feel supported.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for this ongoing awareness, what would you say?
Talk, share, seek support. There are a lot of people, myself being one of them, who had ostomy surgery in the 80s and really didn't talk about it until the early 2000s just because people do not talk about bowel and bladder disorders. So it's becoming much easier to share and open up and then other people feel supported, feel like they're not alone. It's just raising that awareness.
So what would you like society to know about ostomies as a condition?
That it really is an enabling surgery. People who have ostomies have suffered with health issues for years, usually, generally, before ever having ostomy surgery because of conditions like Crohn's and colitis. The doctors try all kinds of medicines and different therapies now with the biologics to sort of really make sure that nobody has to have an ostomy. It seems to be their goal, but if you talk to people in the ostomy community, it's having had this surgery, people question why they didn't do it sooner, because you're so sick, so malnourished, so tied to the toilet, you're not able to travel, some people are not even able to leave their houses because of fear of accidents. So once you have the ostomy, your health, over once you're over your recovery period of 6 months to a year, it really is enabling, and people feel so much better. We have famous athletes who are, you know, have ostomies and are very, very happy to be able to be back doing athletics.
I'd thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
My friends, one of the most fascinating things in all of disability life is hearing about what different branches of the same tree are doing. Learning Disabilities Association being a great example of this. For the fact is, they have chapters in many, many places. And the work carries a central theme to make things better for those with a learning disability. But the staff and the individuals responsible for each branch might take a different approach. But that does not change the fact they are working towards a common ideal, common goal of just making things the best they can in disability life. As the holidays approach, we all could stand to be reminded that we're better as a community. Times have been tough this year. There's no getting around that. But the fact is, many disability groups are rising to the occasion. They're saying that we need our people to know they still matter. No matter what's happening in the world, no matter what challenges we're facing, united, we are an important part of this great community. Part of this great tapestry we call life. That's never to be underestimated. For any person with a disability, it's been my experience that they feel they're facing the problems of life all on their own. Those problems become too daunting and too overwhelming to be reckoned with. It's when they know that they have the appropriate supports, they start to realize there is strength in numbers, there is strength in community, and that what they're going through is not something to be hidden away, it's not something to poke fun at, it's not something to be embarrassed about or to hide in any way. For the fact is, the myths surrounding any given condition can be very hard to ignore, especially when they're coming from a source you might happen to trust. But you must always ask yourself, is this my experience? Do I know firsthand what this disability means? If it means that to one person, how can I be sure that's what it means to the entire population affected? Disability is never a one-size-fits-all condition. I mean, something like learning disability is a great example. Might affect one person in the sense of difficulty with math, or learning it in a different way, rather. Might affect another person in the way that they learn languages or process written information. But the fact is, with any condition, no matter how difficult or how big and scary it might seem on the surface, there is always hope, my friends. There is always at least some small step in the right direction we as a people can take. But it's when we decide that our pride is not the solution, but rather to ask for help, to trust, and to let ourselves reach our full potential, that we finally start to grow. We're not doing ourselves any favors by saying, I can handle this all on my own, when in our heart of hearts we know we can't. No one is above needing that right support. No one is above needing someone to encourage them or to tell them that they are in fact capable. We all have that moment that we need it. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.